We'll do it live.
Okay.
Well, no. We'll do it live! Fuck it! Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Eddie's Wall. We are filming live on Facebook here in Southern California at the Transworld Snowboarding Studios. And the best part about filming live is the fact that you can comment in your questions. So this is not just my interview, it is your interview as well. Today, we have a really, really cool guest. You know, backcountry snowboarding, and especially big mountain snowboarding, is some of the most difficult things that you can do on a board. The knowledge that you need to ride big lines, the skill that you need to manage your way down these, you know, massive faces in Alaska and Montana and places like that, is really impressive. And it's one of the highest consequences, riding that you can do. So our guest today is definitely a connoisseur, if you will, or just a pro at doing exactly that. He's one of the best current big mountain riders in the world, I would say. And he just released his full part for the Transworld Snowboarding movie Insight, which is available now on iTunes. So if you haven't swooped over yet, please head over to iTunes and get it and check out his part. And please give a warm welcome for Jason Robinson.
Hey, thanks.
What's up, dude?
Thanks for having me, Eddie.
Yeah, you're welcome. This crowd is just, you know, can't believe we max it out every time.
Oh, a lot of love out there.
And, okay, they're very poignant. Okay, so here we are with J-Rob. Well, first of all, so you don't come to SoCal tons, or you're not from Southern California. You don't hang out here all the time. Let's talk about, man, where do we start? I mean, what brought you down here in the first place? You came down for the Insight premiere.
Exactly, yeah. I came down here for the Insight premiere. I spent pretty much my whole summer out in the wilderness and came out, spent a couple days sort of decompressing, if you will, or sort of adjusting back into society. And I saw that the premiere was going on. My longtime friend Leland McNamara, he lives in the same area Montana I'm from.
Yep.
He's telling me he's heading down here for the premiere. I should book a flight. You know, I haven't been out of the woods for more than like 48 hours at this point.
Yeah, okay, wait. So first off, because this is not a common thing to hear in the 2016 of Twitters and cell phone and crazy nonstop. So you lived out in the woods in Montana for over 100 days.
Yeah, exactly. I spent about 100 days in the Bob Marshall Wilderness, this massive wilderness area, and was actually in the most remote ranger station in the lower 48. Just right in that area, you are, even the way the crow flies, the furthest from any asphalt or anything like that. So you're deep. It's, you know, 34 miles to the nearest trailhead from where you're at.
Just the trailhead.
That's just the trailhead.
Not a highway.
Yeah, and then you're probably up, you know, X amount of miles up a dirt road or something like that. And I mean, and the only way in is on foot or horseback. It's, and you know, no motorized
vehicles
whatsoever.
Whoa. So you went out there in June?
Yeah, towards the end of June, about June 20th, we rode out. One of the first times ever on a horse, we saddled up, and it was 30 plus mile ride in.
And you had donkeys carrying stuff, or
yeah,
not?
Well, yeah. So
I thought I saw a photo.
Yeah, so I was pretty, you know, I was pretty new, like super new to that at that point. So I was literally just on a saddle horse, just riding.
Right.
But my supervisor, who, if that's kind of a long story, but I knew him from snowboarding. He was like one of the local heroes of mine growing up, like shredding around, following him around. And the real long story there, ended up contacting me for this position.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he was leading a string of 9 mules, all packed up, loaded with a lot of the people that are going to be working out there, all our gear and stuff.
Supplies.
And yeah.
So so you were out there actually working, not just like chilling.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. It was essentially paid position. I was working for the U.S. Forest Service.
Oh, crazy.
Yeah, technically my job was the station guard out there.
for all the tons of people that are out there. You have to be
I'm the guard. Yeah, exactly. Or station guard, aka station manager.
But you're kind of like watching the area, watching what's going on.
Yeah, so why the whole facility's out there, is essentially trail work. Okay. So, you know, during the winter, there's really no one out there, and you know, trees will fall on the trails, and it's all, you know, no mechanized devices. So these trail crews are out there clearing the trails with axes and these saws, cross-cut saw.
Right.
And so the ranger station is there to facilitate clearing the trails.
Right.
And, you know, there's about 18 employees out there for the first month and a half, 2 months. And then my job, I was the, you know, station guard. I lived in the ranger station, had my own little room upstairs. And the trail crews, they're kind of like roving crews. They'll go out for 10 days. We have, you know, 10-day hitch. We were 10 days on, 4 days off is our schedule. And so I was there. I was doing like maintenance stuff around the station.
Yeah.
Greeting like guests show up, you know, I'm like
backpackers and stuff.
Yeah, backpackers, people on horseback. The river flows right through there, so a lot of like pack rafters and rafters come through. And I'm literally there giving them information on the trails. And we always had like a jug of Tang and some cookies. So like,
no way.
Hey, here some Tang and cookies. Kind of like ironic or funny, but. The coolest part of the job is I got to work with horses a lot, so I'll sort of get to be like the head wrangler working out there. So,
because
we have about 20 head of stock between horses and mules.
Yeah.
And there's this big fenced in area. It's about 200 acres where the station and the whole sort of compound is, and we'll keep the two wrangle horses in there and put the other 20 out just free range, let them do their thing.
Whoa.
And so any days where we would need the horses or mules, then I'll saddle up, sunrise, ride out, and go like look for these.
Yeah.
Look for the horses and mules. And, you know, sometimes they're in their like little regular spot, but sometimes they're like way off. So you're out galloping around, loping around, trotting around, like looking for the stock, trying to like corral them back to the round them up, send them back to the corral.
Jamie Mayer just asked, you brought horses out. Did they have any badass names?
Oh, the best one. Well, the one I rode out, his name was Morgan. And every morning I'd say, Guten Morgen, you know. I'd saddle him up, you know.
Guten Morgen.
I'm trying to think the best name. One of the mules' name was Big Timer. I thought that was a pretty cool name.
Big Timer.
Einstein, that's a cool one. Yeah.
Daniel Hammett, did you make it to Lemonade Springs when you worked at the Bob Marshall Wilderness?
No. I don't know where Lemonade Springs is. I mean, it's extremely vast. It's over 1.5 million acres.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So we're just in one little area. I was working for the Spotted Bear Ranger District. So I remained on that district pretty much.
Right.
And there's like 4 or 5 other ranger districts. Kind of each kind of maintain like their own section of it.
Right.
So yeah, I've never even heard of Lemonade Springs.
So you're not out there alone. Like there are a few people out there, a couple little cabins and stuff.
So there's probably at Big Prairie. That's the name of the spot I was at. There's the main ranger station. There's the ranger's house, and then there's bunkhouse and another cabin and like a tool shed. So there's like 4 or 5. And the big barn and all that. So there's like 4 or 5 buildings.
Were like most of the people pretty cool? Because I figure one thing that's kind of crazy about that is if you get stuck with like a crazy person, there's no way getting away from them. But was everybody pretty chill?
Yeah, and so then I think that's part of it. You know, it takes a pretty like unique individual, a lot of like-minded people that are like going to sign up for a job where you spend, you know, a month to 3 months
in the middle,
pretty much disconnected from you know, the rest of the world.
Right, right. And, I mean, what is that like, just spending that much time? I mean, I've traveled and stuff, but I don't think I've ever spent, I definitely haven't ever spent that much time completely away from, you know.
Oh, man, it's a trip. Like, it's really hard to describe even. I mean, and going into it, that was, like, one of my thoughts is, like, the kind of anticipation, like, getting a little nervous, even, like, even scared about this a little bit. Like, wow, I'm just going to go out there for the next 3 months. That's pretty crazy, you know.
Right.
But no, it's cool. Like, you know, like your phone doesn't work, obviously. There's no TV. Our main connection to the outside world is this AM radio station, The Cur, it's like a country music station, which is fitting because you're out there in the country, you've got your cowboy boots on and your Wranglers, which, you know, I'm still wearing, but...
So you came out of that out over 100 days completely in the middle of the wilderness, and then literally about 2 days later, you decide out of the blue to hop in your truck, drive from Montana down to Southern California, which may as well be the epicenter of like crazy society stuff. Like, it's like the most materialistic place on the planet Earth. And how is that?
So that was a trip, you know, and I'm bouncing around in my head, you know, like, geez, am I really gonna do this? Because, literally, you know, I ride out, you know, and at this point I learned a lot about working with the horses and stuff. So I was leading a little string of mules back, you know, with my gear, and then just dropping them off at the main station at Spotted Bear.
Yeah.
And I go back to, you know, my little trailer's parked at my parents' house, and I went there and, like, I literally didn't leave for like 48 hours. Like, I didn't want to like go, like the thought of like going to a restaurant or even like a coffee shop or seeing a stoplight, that was like really bizarre.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I had a couple of my closest friends come visit.
Yeah.
I was like not really ready to like go into town. And like, this is a small town in Montana. And so that was kind of weird. I was like, all right, if I'm going to like the most densely populated, or one of the most densely populated places in the country, from literally like
nothing,
an unpopulated place, essentially.
Yeah.
So that was kind of a trip. I remember thinking, like, man, am I really going to do this? Like, this is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
And plus, you know, I had like 24 hours to make it. So if I was like, oh, if I'm going to go, I'm just going to like cruise. Go. So that gave me like some time just like driving solo to kind of in my head, you know, sort of.
Yeah.
Prepare myself in a way.
So then you come down, Insight movie premiere, which is awesome. I mean, your part is next level. If you haven't seen it yet, go to iTunes, get Insight, check out his part because it's mental. The premiere was awesome. You know, everybody was going nuts. It was a really fun night. And then after the premiere, we were actually going to do this Facebook Live, and then I kind of came down with a cold, and then you were like, oh, that's cool, dude, I'm in Mexico. So tell us about, and if you're watching this, we are going to get to some snowboarding stuff, but I mean, this is pretty good. All these stories are too good to not talk about. So from that, then you go down to Mexico, and I was thinking, I heard when you were like, oh, I'm heading down to Mexico, I was like, okay, cool, he's going to go just, you know, down a little bit south of the border, probably hit a surf spot, you know, K-58s or whatever, something pretty close, but you went left, you didn't go close, right?
Yeah, so I mean, I was sticking around, we were gonna do the interview, and then, yeah, like you said, you got sick, and I remember getting that, when you messaged that, I was just like, kind of combing the beach, looking for surf, and I found myself like, all the way down, like closer to San Diego, and
you're like, I'm already in San Diego.
And I get the email like, oh yeah, I don't think it's gonna work, I'm feeling sick. I was like, well, I'm all the way down here, and you know, the surf really didn't look very good, and there was a ton of people out there anyway, and there still weren't really any waves,
yeah,
or many waves. And I was looking at the surf line at the, you know, breaks down south, and it was like, yeah, a little bit down. It was, you know, it was pretty much the same swell as you get here. Yeah. And I was looking for, you know, 200 miles down, a little better. 400 miles down, it was like going off. And through the little research I did, I heard of like all these kind of world-class point breaks that get the sort of fall, winter swells. And I was like, well, you know, I'm like down here, I'm really stoked to surf. So
Might as well go for it.
Yeah, I didn't really know what I was doing. I didn't have like any sort of, you know, you see people with like, you know, all these like pretty much geared for like 4x4 stuff, like shovels and jacks and like winches and all this stuff, you know.
Jerry cans and all that.
And I was like, I'll be able to figure it out. Yeah, let's just, you know, go for it.
And so you went how far south? How many miles?
About 500 miles down into Baja.
That is so crazy. So how many days did it take you to get to where your kind of final destination was? Like,
well, I mean, if you're really motivated, you get there like in a day's drive, but I actually didn't even leave San Diego till like 3 or 4 in the afternoon.
Right.
So I just made it like a few hours, 4 or 5 hours south.
Yeah.
Ended up kind of driving up this sort of dirt road to the coast and camped out for the night.
Yeah.
And then woke up, kept driving. So it was really just a two-day drive. It kind of took me an extra day because it was hard to, like, connect, like, the maps online and, like, where the surf break was. It was all kind of confusing. And yeah. There's no, like, turn on this road. It's like you're kind of winging it going down these. I think this dirt road will. It looks well-traveled enough. It's probably going
right
to this spot. But
yeah.
It took me probably an extra, like, most of a day to kind of figure out where the spot was even at.
Right. And then so then when you finally found it, and you let the cat out of the bag to me earlier, but you paddle out into the water, and there was, like, somebody out in the water already, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it was amazing. So such a trip. I mean, I saw this, like, you know, this custom Toyota truck, and I was like, oh, it looks familiar. Like, I think that might be a friend of mine's. And then, but I was like, oh, you know, there's probably a bunch of, you know, it's like, yeah. I didn't really know. And then sure enough, I paddle out, and it was no other than Scotty Whitlake was out in the lineup, you know, or not even lineup. There's him, his wife, and their two friends.
Right.
And I'm the fifth person out there, and it's like perfect sunset session. I was like, paddle up, and it's Scotty Whitlake who's, you know, been like a hero of mine since I was a kid, and still is. I mean, living this like super inspiring life.
Yeah.
And so that was a total trip because you're in the middle, you're 50 miles from like the closest town, and then you're even like a 45 minute drive from the road. You're down this like bumpy, windy dirt road.
And you happen to bump into someone that you've known for a long time. And,
so.
Yeah. So what was his reaction when you paddle out in the water? Because that was probably like, what the
heck? Yeah, he was kind of tripped out. I mean, he was as surprised, if not more, than I was.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, he's been down there for 4.5 months, and you know, he's like, whoa.
Yeah.
Crazy. What are you doing out here, Jason? I was like, oh, man, just kind of chased the surf down. And
no way.
So
then did you guys, did you park up by him and kick it with him for a bit? Or?
Well, there's like a little, you know, there's all these different little camp spots. And so I ended up camping in that same spot for about just over a week, and they were just up the path from me, and so yeah, we had a few surf sessions, some, you know, little campfires and some good hang time.
I like how you said when you got down there and you paddled out for the first session before you saw Scotty, you surfed for about 2 hours and caught more waves with no people than you caught here for like 2 weeks.
Yeah, it was a trip. I spent 2 weeks, you know, in San Diego area.
Yeah.
And, you know, got some pretty good waves, you know, but within, literally 2 hour session, you know, it's just this perfect long right point break with 5, maybe 10 people max out there.
Right.
So definitely more waves than people. And it's a pretty long ride, you know. So I literally, spent more time on my surfboard in the first 2 hours there than I did in 2 weeks here.
Yeah, man, that is.
That was a trip.
Yeah. All right, let's get to a couple of these questions here. Chris Compadre, which superpower from X-Men would you rather have? Wolverine's, the metal skeleton, and rapid healing, or Storm's to control weather? Because there's Wolverine has like the metal things that like shoot out. And then Storm, controls the weather. So you could actually just make it snow all the time.
Okay.
Or have, you could have good waves all the time. That's,
all right, I'm going to, okay, so, like.
If, but also, I, Wolverine can never get injured.
So is it specific? Okay, so I understand the question, Chris. so I think I would rather have some sort of physical superpower than some sort of power to actually control the weather. You know, if you're making it, it's like, whether you're snowboarding and it's just like, it's going to be perfect pow every day, or you're trying to surf, it's just perfect swell, perfect wind every day. You know, maybe it'd get a little old. You're like, there's no down. It's like always perfect.
That's a good point.
So I think I'd rather.
You're like, I need a down day and let's make it rain.
Yeah, I'd rather be like ready for when nature does its thing. Yeah. Like I'm just this Superman to take advantage and have the most fun I can with what you know, what's provided, I guess.
Good question, Chris. That was awesome. Billy Biola.
That's my boy right there.
Okay.
Billy, shout out. Love you, homie.
Yeah, thanks for tuning in. Do you like your nickname, your new nickname, J-Bob? J-Bob.
Well, yeah, I guess I don't think it's really caught on yet. And
well, now it will.
He may be the only one that's called me that so far. But, yeah, I mean, I spent the whole summer in the Bob Marshall Wilderness. J-Bob.
J-Bob.
It's pretty fitting. I mean,
yeah,
you know,
it works.
I'm down.
Cool.
Yeah, Bill.
Good question. Cameron Berlin, what inspired you to go into the wilderness for that long, I guess?
I know Cam too. He's a good, great guy. Pretty much the opportunity presented itself. You know, I got this job offer. I've always wanted to, you know, do something like that and like sort of immerse myself out in the wild like that, but you know, never really had like the guts to just in or the initiative to just go for it. So yeah, when Guy Zollner, my buddy, my supervisor, he offered me the job and
went for it.
I was like, cool, man, like this is a really cool opportunity.
Yeah.
And just did it.
Cool.
So just said yes to, you know, say yes to like to
new
say
things.
Yes.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Carrie Hawk. That's my sister actually. That's
pretty oh.
That's rad. Hey Carrie.
Awesome.
After being in the wilderness for 100 days, what was the biggest eye opener visiting SoCal? Or like what was maybe the biggest, like, I don't know.
Kind of. Well, yeah, and it wasn't like anything profound or new, but it was like you literally spend all that time out there without like a cell phone, and it's there's this little community living out there, so it's all just like personal one-on-one or
yeah.
like a small group
yeah.
contact and conversation and
yeah,
and then you come here and it's kind of, you know, you might even say hi to someone in the store or on the street and they like don't even look at you,
right.
you know,
yeah,
so.
Yeah.
And but that's not something that was new or I hadn't experienced
yeah,
before.
Yeah.
But yeah, it definitely was like, oh wow.
Yeah.
You know, the biggest thing, and I'm like trying to kind of piece this together too, because when I was out there in the wilderness, I was like having super crazy, like vivid dreams, like every night.
Whoa.
Even if I'd take like a nap for an hour, I'd wake up and had this crazy dream.
Whoa.
And then I came back into, you know, to SoCal, and like the dreams kind of turned off. In
Whoa.
A way. And then when I went back down to, when I was down
Mexico.
In Baja, you're in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And all the people I was hanging out with down there were having super crazy dreams.
Whoa.
And so was I.
Crazy.
So it felt like you'd lived like a week overnight, you know,
right.
like you'd remember so much. So that was like the biggest, and I don't
Whoa.
Know, you know,
if,
I don't know
how that relates
if
or...
that's just because the stimulation of being in the city or
yeah.
All the... All the, you know, wave, you know, energy waves from phones and power and
yeah.
all that. I don't know.
Yeah.
But that was like the biggest, most obvious
difference. You know, it's funny because we, my wife and I lived in Southeast Asia for 4 months. Like after I was done snowboarding, I was like, let's just get away from everything. And we were mainly in like on islands in little villages in like northern Thailand and in Nepal, like in real tiny. And we were
cool.
always just staying in like little huts the whole time. And it was pretty... We would pass through cities every once in a while, but for the most part, we were like way off the trail. And we're living in another country for 4 months, so you're not even like seeing anything that has to do with the United States.
Yep.
And then when we came back, it's like, I know what you're kind of talking about, because it was like, I mean, we flew from, you know, like the middle of nowhere in
yep.
Cambodia
yep.
into LAX. And
yeah.
when we like left the airport, I was just like, oh my God, like it was just so, well, I think the one of the biggest things to me was all of the advertisements everywhere. The billboards and the advertising was just so, because out in Southeast Asia, there's no real money for that. So it was like seeing that was just like, oh my God, like everywhere you look, there's just like, buy this, you need this, buy this, buy this. And I was like, Jesus, like,
yeah,
it was pretty crazy.
Yeah. You're bombarded in
yeah.
a way.
Let's see, okay. My sister's husband's mom is watching, and she says hello. Well, hello there.
My mom.
Oh. Well, my sister.
Hi, mom.
Hi, mom. Yeah. Jason's mom is watching. Oh, that's random because my sister just commented, and then my sister's husband's name is Jason. So I was like, oh, that's random, but dude, okay. Well, there you go. Daniel Hammett, Lemonade Springs is just up Twin Creek.
Oh, okay.
If you know
where Yeah, so that's yeah, I was like 30 miles that so that you can pretty much if Twin Creek is the Twin Creek I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
That's like before you really get to the straight wilderness.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was like pretty far deep
from
in
there.
I'll have to check it out though if she thinks it's cool.
Cool. Siobhan Cash, will you ever come snowboarding in New Zealand?
I'd love to, man. You know, ironically, I've never been to New Zealand for snowboarding, but I've been to Australia, and
yeah.
you know, because it's not as much of a snowboard destination, obviously, as New Zealand is.
Right.
So,
right.
But it was a pretty short trip, and
yeah.
I did this bank slalom out there, and then ended up doing a little camp trip, and then just ended up surfing. So I didn't really have the time to go to New Zealand, but man, yeah. I'd love to. Like,
yeah. Let's see. Can you tell? Oh, Billy Marshall, can you tell a story about linking up with the fishermen in Mexico?
Oh, Billy Marshall, yeah, that's my boy too. Yeah, sure. So it was like I was telling you, the first night I just kind of went up this kind of random dirt road to get to the coast, or a little spot I think was mellow and safe to camp out. And I just, you know, I've got my little back of my truck with a little canopy on, just had a little bed in there and stuff. So I just slept in my truck kind of in the middle of nowhere, like 10 miles up this road.
Yeah.
And I wake up and I'm kind of like making a little coffee, little like yogurt kind of breakfast thing going, and I see this dude over there, you know, I was like, and he kind of walks up to me, and you know, and all I kind of heard were everyone's like, be careful in Baja, it's sketchy, Mexico's sketchy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So like my first instinct, I was like, man, we're like in the middle of nowhere, like I wonder like what this dude's doing. But it was pretty obvious he had these big old like traps, like these cages for catching shellfish. And you know, like I don't speak much. I have like a very limited vocabulary in Spanish, and like he had even more limited vocabulary in English.
Right.
And yeah, we like had some conversation, you know, through like the little words we knew, and you know, hand gestures, body language, whatever.
Yeah.
And so he wanted a cigarette. He gave me all these clams. He had like a bag full of clams, or a few clams, and he gave me like these massive clams, you know, like bigger than any clam I'd seen. And he just wanted a cigarette, and I was like, oh yeah, man, here you go. You know, I had some American Spirits, and gave him a cigarette, and you know, I was making coffee, so then you know, I pour him up a cup of coffee, and you know, we're like trying to communicate about, you know, the waves and the fishing, and just like having some sort of connection there. And then, you know, he leaves, goes on his way, and then you know, we're like 10 miles from town, and I just start driving back. I'm gonna keep heading south, and he had these cages wrapped around his bicycle and was just pushing the bike.
Right.
So I like gestured to him to like, hey, you know, I'll help you out through the cages. Pop my tailgate down through the cages on the tailgate.
Yeah.
We drove drove to town.
Yeah.
He could ride his bike, so he's riding his bike instead of walking it.
Right.
And then when I stopped, like drop off the cages, and he comes riding up, and I couldn't tell what he was saying, but he had me wait there, and he came back with this like huge bag of clams, was like offering me all this seafood.
Yeah.
He like showed me how to eat them and everything, and how to open it, and what, you know, put lemon on it, and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it was like way more than I would ever eat before they probably went bad or something. So I just took a couple more, and, you know, but he was like super cool, super grateful that I gave him a ride, and, you know, he was gonna be pushing his bike for like couple hours probably.
Yeah, dude. See, I think that's the difference between traveling to somewhere and just diving into the experience, rather than hearing the stories and then just being like, oh, no, you know, because we'll go down to Baja sometimes, and people, we have a lot of friends here who are like, oh my God, you go to Baja, that's so sketchy. Like, then you're like, when you get down there and you meet the people, or even in Cambodia or Laos or Vietnam, you know, it's like everybody is, for the most part, it's like everyone you meet is just so nice and so kind, and you know, it's like, I don't know, it's pretty awesome, I think.
Yeah, there's like a certain amount of, you know, just like being aware and like tuning into what seems like a bad situation.
Yeah, you have to be smart.
Bad place, bad time.
Yeah, like you might bump into like you might bump into some tourist here who's like puts a big camera around their neck and then walks through Tijuana at 9 at night, and then they get mugged, and they're like, that's horrible there. It's like, yeah, because you're an idiot, not because...
I mean, same thing could happen, in like some city, like...
Right here.
In LA, areas in LA, you know, you don't want to...
Yeah.
Do stuff you're like a target in that situation.
Yeah. Matthew Thomas, what's your favorite thing about Southern California?
Oh, man, probably the food and the ocean, I mean, for sure. Those are like the two things that come to my head.
Yep. You like fish tacos?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Who doesn't?
Kenny F. Stifler, what music do you listen to when you ride, if any?
Oh, Kenny, what's up, buddy? I grew up listening to music when I was riding, and it, you know, when I was a kid, and it was always like hip hop, rap music.
That is crazy, because I would have never guessed that.
But when, like, I don't snowboard with, even like if I'm at the resort now, I don't wear headphones. Like, yep. I think it's such a like stimulate, like full sensory experience. Like, you know, you've got the feel, you've got the wind, the noise. It's all like, so yeah, I just listen to the wind, you know,
pretty much,
or the board.
No, that's amazing. Jordan Mihalix, what compelled you to start riding and keep riding?
Oh man, well, just in general, I mean, just the feeling, you know, being outside, the connection you get with nature and the people you're out there with, and yeah, a friend was just kind of asking me a similar question this morning, and it's like, and the feeling, like, it feels like you're floating, you know, when you're snowboarding, and especially in powder, I mean, you know, you're on the ground most of the time, but it still feels like floating. And,
yeah, it's like
and
a hoverboard.
And you're so in that moment, you know,
right.
you're fully present, like, this is this turn in front of you, or this tree there, and this little berm there, whatever it is, like, that's your world. That's all it is. Everything else, any, like, stress or any other responsibility other than, like, not running into that tree, and then I'm gonna like slash right there, and then here it's like you're so focused on just right now. I think it's cool.
Yeah, I think so. We have, and if you haven't seen these, definitely check them out. It's on twsnow.com under the Insight button, and we have a lot of behind the scenes videos from Insight, the movie that just released. But in yours, it's kind of behind the scenes of every rider, and in yours, I thought. You know, one really cool thing that you mentioned was, and it shows you riding this line that was just mental. And you were like, yeah, it's funny because you don't, you're like, I'm not scared when you're on the face because you're just so in it, you know? And like, I don't know. I just thought that was pretty interesting because I guess it's, you're right. Like if you're on the top of a face, you're just like, oh, I'm freaking out. But then as soon as you get on it, it's just pure instinct and you're just like trying to figure it out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then the other thing that you said that was so badass at the end of it, it was so cool because you're like, oh yeah, that little voice in your head is telling you like, what are you doing up here? You're crazy. And then you're like, you know, I just tell him like, hey, don't worry. Like, chill out, man. Like, I'm not going to forget about you.
I sound like a weirdo.
No, it's like, it was actually like the most amazing thing I ever heard because you were like, hey, I won't forget about you. Like, but for now, just chill out and let me just do this. And that's, I think, what an like amazing point of view of, or just way to think of, even like a trip to Baja or a trip out into the wilderness. Like, you're always going to have this little voice in your head being like, don't do that. And just be like, hey, chill out. I'm not going to forget about you, but I'm just going to go do this, you know?
Yeah, a good positive, you know, self-talk is, that's important.
Yeah. These guys, they went to lunch with you yesterday, and they were, when they came back, this morning, they were, or whatever, like, today I was talking to them about it, and they mentioned that you, you were talking about the level of riding in the backcountry, and you right now get on some faces that are, you know, some of the biggest and most gnarly faces that snowboarders drop into, and you were talking about your thoughts on like the progression and pushing the sport. And you know, in freestyle, it's always in the half pipe, you always have to go a foot higher, and you know, slope style, add another quirk, add another flip, add another spin, you know, double, quad, triple, whatever. What are your thoughts on, you know, where big mountain riding is right now and pushing it, and where is the line of like, okay, you guys, like, what are we doing? Because now, when you make a mistake, it can be a really bad situation.
Yes, I think the progression there, yeah, it's maybe not as obvious, like, yeah, adding another 180 or to your spin or another cork to your spin, to your flip or whatever, but, so it's a lot more, mental, I would say.
Right.
And a lot more of it is, yeah, just the learning about, more about the snowpack and, you know, traveling through avalanche terrain and then getting the sort of medical training and that sort of stuff in the event of an accident.
Yep.
And of course, you know, with being proficient in an avalanche rescue and that sort of stuff, because those are like realities, you know, they do happen. And so, yeah, a lot more, it's maybe less on snow and like on your board of a progression as it is more, you know, mental. Just educating yourself
right.
and right. Yeah, and getting more more comfortable in these spaces, the more time you spend in the mountains, and maybe you see, like, anticipate where and if things were going to go wrong more, you're right. more proficient at that, and
yeah.
instead of just blindly going down this run, like, I hope the whole face doesn't slide, you
yeah.
know, and having more of an idea, like, okay, like, that little roll right there, you know, I want to do a turn there, but if anything slides, that's probably going to be the spot, or,
right.
so just a lot more, just, like, time and experience
yeah.
in the mountains, and,
right.
you know, to read terrain better and make smarter decisions.
Yeah. Don Hitchy, what is your favorite spots to ride in Japan?
So I've been to Japan a couple of times, and one, I don't know any of the spots we actually went. We were on the main island just going to little, like, fun little park sort of resort spots. So I was pretty limited, but
mm-hmm.
I spent about, like, 10 days in Hakuba.
Oh, yeah.
Hakuba, however you say it. But in that place, that was amazing. So.
Yeah.
And I've never been to the North Island.
Hokkaido?
Yeah, yeah. Where, you know, you see, like, that's sort of the picturesque, or the stereotypical Alaska, like, super deep, you
yeah.
know, chest deep blower pillows and
yeah.
cool trees. And we got a little bit of that, but in Hakuba. But, yeah, there's more, you know, bigger, there's, like, some pretty big mountains, actually. Like, that, like, Jeremy Jones, they went there and
yep.
further, I think. Yeah, and further. And, like, it's, like, there's some, like, full-on Alaska-style looking
yeah.
looking mountains. And, yeah, the coolest thing in Hakuba, too, it's, like, you go up the gondola or the chairlift or whatever, and then, you know, a little 10-minute hike, and you're dropping these super sweet sort of, you know, off-the-resort backcountry runs that go down to this, like, this road. And we had a Japanese homie with us, and he was, like, literally Masaki, actually his name, and he would, like, call us in a taxi and have a, like, so we'd do these road laps and, like, have a taxi waiting for us at the bottom.
What?
You know, and then they just, like, drive us right back to the ski resort,
just power runs and,
like,
and call Uber
again.
Like, hey.
So it was pretty sick, you know, like,
was,
that place is unreal, you know, like, I love Japan. I mean,
yeah.
I want to spend more time there for sure, like,
yeah.
just the total experience is amazing.
Yeah,
wherever you go.
Cameron Berlin, will you compete in the Nate shoot this year? It's going to be off the hook.
Oh, Cam, I don't know, man. That's a little too far ahead to make any definitive decision. That'd be fun. I'd love to. You know, I grew up doing it.
Yeah.
The Nate shoot is a event, for the people who don't know, is a event at my home mountain, Whitefish Mountain Resort. And it's in honor of a friend of ours that took his own life when he was about 18, and it's been, that was, I think, like 16 years ago or something. So they've been doing this event in,
awesome.
In his honor every year.
Nice.
Yeah, super fun event, super fun mountain.
Yeah.
Not sure, Cam, if I'll be there, but if I am, yeah, I'll see you there, I'm sure. But,
cool. Rich Mallory, have you ever been to Vermont to snowboard?
No, not to snowboard. You know, like, for the last 4 years, I was riding for Anon. Which, you know, is part of Burton, and they're based in Burlington.
Burlington, yeah.
So, and they every year I'd, you know, this year they didn't, because I'm not riding for them anymore, but they'd sent me out there for the last 4 years.
Oh, cool.
And it was super awesome. Like, I love that place, but no, I've never snowboarded out. I've never actually snowboarded on the East Coast. Furthest east I've snowboarded was, like, I snowboarded in Quebec, but that was, like, in the city, so
yep.
I've never been to the mountains. Like, I was pretty surprised. The mountains were definitely, like, looked bigger and better than I had imagined.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I've only been there in the fall.
All right. What was the one thing I wanted? Oh, yeah. Okay. So in your part, in the Insight movie, Transworld Snowboarding movie, which is available on iTunes right now, a little plug there, you talk about this tiny home you built, and we haven't even talked about that yet. So what, take us through the process. It was last summer you had, so over a year ago, you just thought about building a tiny home, and then...
Oh, well, so it actually dates back quite a bit longer than that. Like, it'd been kind of an ongoing project for, well, almost like 3 years ago or something.
Okay.
And just between, like, you know, winter, I don't really have the time, and then in the spring and summer when I had the time to do it, you know, I'd, like, had spent most of my money on the, during the season, filming the video part and stuff, so...
Yeah.
I didn't really have much time to, or much, like, money to get more supplies and stuff to finish it.
Right.
So it drew out for a while.
For a while.
But So yeah, and that was like kind of a conscious decision this year. I was like, you know, instead of just going crazy, flying to Europe, going heli skiing here or whatever, I was like, I'm gonna like put the money I have right now, get the last bit of the materials and things I need to finish this. And so I kind of like set time aside when I'd normally just be like snowboarding like a freak every day from like beginning to end.
Yep.
I like focused on that because I knew by the end of the season would come around again and I'd still be like trying to scrap up the cash to make this happen. So I finished it this pretty much like this past winter, you know, like end of February, beginning of March is when it kind of like wrapped it up.
So little trailer that you tow behind your truck and has, what do you use for heat?
There's this little stove from, they're designed for sailboats. So it's a propane stove. Like originally I'd even got this little wood stove and everything, but was thinking like the reality, if I was going to use it to travel around, like I'd have to travel with wood or like collect wood, you know, in a snowstorm or something.
Right.
Doesn't really seem realistic. So
yeah,
I ended up going with the propane heater, but super efficient. The thing.
Yeah. Heats it up.
Yeah. And it's such a small space, you know, it's 16 feet long, 8 feet wide.
Yeah.
And that thing gets pretty cooking in there.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
And so you drove it from Montana up to Alaska and then just you kind of pulled it over out into like on the side of a dried up riverbed kind of.
Yeah, pretty much. So like about driving it up. So this was like literally, you know, I just finished this little trailer house. I'd never like even taken it more than like 20 miles just as kind of a test drive to make sure like it didn't
fall
the
apart.
Whole thing didn't just like rattle off or something sketchy,
like,
you know.
Oh damn, it's just gone.
So like other than that, I'd never taken it anywhere. And then I also converted my truck during this whole process, converted my truck to run on vegetable oil.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd never gone more than 20 miles with this new setup. And so I figured, you know, why not? I'll just drive all the way to Alaska, which is kind of like a crazy idea. And not even up to Alcan. We took the Cassier Highway, which is like the scenic route or like almost the back road to Alaska. So it was like even bumpier and windier and snowier. So then we got to Alaska and up to Haines. It was like such an amazing feeling, you know. Drove up there on vegetable oil, which like that was super cool.
That's crazy.
Now I got my little trailer and it was like everything kind of was like paying off. I was like, this is awesome, you know, because I was like pretty stressed, didn't think it was all gonna work, and made it, no major issues. And then we literally just parked the spot 8 miles, like 8 miles up Haines Highway, like right on the river. It was freaking...
How did you find that spot? Did you just kind of go out and research it, or like drive it?
I just kind of been scanning, you know, like, you know, I'd driven up and down that road quite a few times the past years. And I just kind of like cruise around, try and find a spot that, you know, where you're kind of off the road enough and like, you know, a nice little spot to like post up for a while.
Okay, a couple more questions here before we wrap it up. Let's see, Jeff Hanstad, you should totally budget a bald-faced lodge trip in March.
Jeff, well, he hit me up on Facebook asking me to do this bald-faced lodge trip. You're going to have to talk to one of my sponsors about that, man. I don't know. Like, I love bald-face. Maybe hit up Jeff Pensiero. Maybe he'll... Or maybe if you guys all, like, throw in an extra few $100 each, then it'll cover my seat, and then I'll be there.
Nice. Let's see, Anton Kress, any advice for someone building their own trailer house or like tiny home?
Oh, best advice, because there was, like when I started doing this, there wasn't a ton of information on tiny house living, blah, 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 and like building it. This all kind of like really sparked after I'd sort of started the process. And so like the biggest is like just like the design stuff, you know, and that's the hardest part is just like, you know, and I don't really know how to use, I forget the name of the program, SketchUp.
Okay, yeah.
Is that what it is?
I don't know.
But really just like being super on it, design, like make a design, try and like visualize it, draw it 3D, whatever you can do.
To figure out how everything's going to work.
Yeah, figure out like how the design, like that's the biggest part is just the design. Because, you know, once you commit... And then once you commit to something, then you're just like building it, working on it, and it's pretty straightforward. Just like you're learning how to do it, or you know, you can find information on or help on how to actually physically make it. But I think the design. Just like think about like what you actually want to do with it. Like if you're trying to make it something you travel with, which originally I wasn't even gonna make put mine on a trailer.
Right.
I was just gonna like use it as a cabin.
Yeah.
And it just sort of evolved into that. And there's a whole bunch of things I would have done different if I was gonna do it as a
trailer,
travel trailer.
Right.
But so just think about like what you actually want to do with it, and then yeah, just design like the more.
That's
the
good.
More
yeah.
You
no,
work
that's
on the design,
great advice.
The better.
Yeah. Wait, Pamela Grillo Robinson. Do you know this?
Hey, mom.
This girl. She says your grandma and grandpa want you to get a job on the ground, a safer job. Oh, on the ground, like instead of flying through the air.
Like a regular job.
Yeah, me, whatever makes you happy, son. Oh, that's nice.
Well, it's not really a question, mom, but thanks. Thanks for the. I'm gonna keep snowboarding for now, and then even then, I don't. You know, I'm not gonna like get a job in an office anytime soon or ever. So.
Right. Billy Biolo, ask him if he's afraid of anything. It's a good question. So far,
I don't
hasn't
know.
Seemed like it.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm sure I am. I have to think about it. You have
like
to give me more than
I'm sure. One of these days, I'll find something.
I'm like scared of avalanches. Like that's my biggest fear. You know.
Of course. Yeah.
And even with that, like I'm afraid of like leaving my family and friends behind if I died and what they would have to go through. Like that's my biggest fear.
Yeah.
I would say.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's more like what they would have to go through afterwards.
Yeah.
Like for me, you know, if you die, like you're dead or whatever you believe
in.
You're
not
saying,
oh, darn.
You. Yeah,
right,
yeah.
Right.
You're like, oh, well, that was quite a ride. Like, what a life, you know? It's not like, but it's everyone you left behind that day and they have to deal with that.
Yeah.
Because at least that's my, you know, and I've experienced being on this, you know, the side of it, losing my little brother and everything. So that's the hardest part, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's see, Charles Paquette, what steps did you take to end up riding Alaska like you were born there? Seems like nobody knew who you were, and all of a sudden you were destroying the streets and shredding the gnar in AK. How did you make it happen? And I think that's actually, Charles, a good point, is the fact that you do hit street rails and urban stuff as well, which is pretty crazy, because a lot of guys kind of like just choose one thing or the other. But yeah, I mean, how did you...
Well, I mean, I grew up in Montana. You know, we had a really fun resort, a lot of natural terrain, powder, like natural jumps and stuff like that. You know, short, steep, little technical lines and stuff, like nothing super big. But, and when I started filming snowboarding, it was like, that's all you could afford to do was go jib, you know? We would just, you know, all you need is a shovel and a snowboard and a buddy with a camera and we'd go get shots.
Yeah.
But to do the backcountry stuff, you need all this, you know, either snowmobile or splitboard or helicopter, you know, like, something, way to access that terrain.
Yeah.
But no, so I don't know. It was when I was 27, so this is like 4 years ago now. I got a call from, this was like end of February, beginning of March. I got a call from Justin Hosnick and was like, you want to film with Absinthe? And that's always been like a dream of mine. I was like, yeah, man. And so the first day filming with Absinthe was first time in a helicopter, spent the next like 2 months filming strictly heli ski stuff. We did a month at Eagle Pass Heli in Revelstoke and then a month up at Alaska Heli Skiing up in Haines.
Yep.
And, you know, and I was like with people who had been doing it.
Yep.
And really the thing is, if you turn your snowboard, you know how to use your snowboard, you've been riding these like steep short lines. It's really the same thing, but it's just stacked up. You know, there's more, then it does become more mental of like thinking, where's your slough going to go?
Yeah.
Memorizing your route and stuff. So like the actual riding comes, you know, it's pretty natural progression, but there's things to learn are more along those lines. And so my little brother taught me a lot with like how to like, you know, taking a photo at the bottom of your line and then like thinking about reversing it and being on top,
right,
digging a profile pit in the snow to see, you know, different layers, what's reacting and what's not. I mean, and I was like, you know, it wasn't like I was a 17-year-old kid thrown in Alaska, like, go for it.
Right.
I had a lot of snowboarding
experience.
And backcountry experience under my belt. So when I did, it was like a pretty seamless.
Yeah.
It was like pretty smooth. Was out there with the best people in the world doing it.
Yeah.
So was able to learn it pretty quick.
From it. Awesome. Derek Meeks, last question. Do you travel around with a fly rod yet?
That's my cuz. What up, Derek? What's up, D? No, I mean, I had one this summer, obviously, being out on the south fork of the Flathead River, but that's kind of like inflates your fishing abilities because like they'll bite anything. It's like so easy to catch these fish out there. But no, I don't travel with fly rod. It's still in Montana, but you know, there's no fly fishing down here anyway.
Yeah, just tasty waves, bro. Yeah.
We'll have to do a trip together. Go ski, you go fly fish, man. We'll do it.
Perfect. Well, a couple things before we finish up here. So we are releasing everyone's parts, full parts, from Insight, the Transworld movie, on twsnow.com over the next few weeks and months. So J-Rob's part will be on there for 48 hours at some point. So just stay tuned. We don't know the specific date as of now, but stay tuned for that. You can see his full part. Also, you can go download the full Insight movie right now on iTunes. So what I would suggest is just logging off of Facebook and going straight to iTunes after I'm done rambling your ear off. Another thing, too, we have the Insight movie book. This is 170 pages. I haven't counted
super
yet.
Super cool.
Super cool. You know, all the writers have, this is a hardcover coffee table book. It's super nice. All the writers have tons of behind the scenes photos in here. It's really nice. Here, there's an example. Right there, it's in color and everything. But yeah, this is available on twsnow.com and other things, you know, like water bottles and t-shirts and everything like that. So go over and check that stuff out. And I think, is that it? Is that it, everybody? Everybody? Oh, we're gonna have to have you sign the wall. We're getting the marker. Well, we'll have you sign the wall in a minute, but J-Rob, thank you so much.
Oh, Eddie,
I really appreciate it. This is amazing.
Thank you for having
and
me.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for tuning in. Thank you to Jason's family for tuning in. And thank you guys for the questions, because this interview would be nothing without your questions and you guys watching. So thank you again. We'll see you next week. Eddie's Wall. See you guys.